Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything we think we know about food. I'm Anthony Zara, and this episode was recorded live at the Food Matters Live event held in Manchester in November 2024. This episode is all about sustainability, but with a focus on how the food industry can use data to set and achieve its goals. Our guest speaker is Meredith Ford, Head of Sustainability for the UK and Ireland at SSP International.
Nice to meet you. My name is Meredith. I'm Head of Sustainability for a business called SSP. I'll explain what SSP do. But just briefly my background. So I've been with SSP for just over a year. And before that, I was at Tesco. So very much food world. Cool. Okay, so briefly to explain SSP, I think a bit like Aramark, SSP is kind of a big company that you probably will have eaten with, but maybe not have heard of. They're pretty big. They run and manage food outlets in train stations and airports. 3,500,000 colleagues globally. I look after the UK and Ireland part of the sustainability plan. And then the business is both franchise and own brand. So we work with these franchise partners, which is brilliant in terms of kind of collaboration on sustainability. And then we also have our own brands, who you're probably less likely to have heard of. So I'm going to take you through a fairly predictably structured case study on kind of where we started to reduce our scope 3 emissions, going through how we've used data and insights to prioritise our kind of focus areas, and then where we've started to run experiments, what's working, what's not. But I was worried it was going to be boring. So I've also tried to overlay basically things that I wish I'd known earlier on in my journey and earlier on in this role. And hopefully it'll have some value for you. So we've been working with an agency called Climato. Is anyone aware of Climato before I explain what they are? Great, cool. So they are kind of one of the many recipe or product level carbon footprint providers and other environmental metrics as well. We're getting a lot of value from working with them. We basically have used them to analyze the carbon footprint of all of our recipes and products. So it's the first time we've had kind of that level of data, which is brilliantly helpful. I was actually a little bit skeptical about the kind of value of this data before we started working with them. I sort of thought coming into the role, SSP was relatively early on in its journey. I sort of thought, do we not already kind of know that, you know, we know what the kind of rankings are of different food types? Is that enough? But I suppose the slightly unexpected benefit of working with this platform that I found is that being able to really specifically quantify the carbon footprint of the dishes is far more motivating for the teams to work with. Because if you can look at the exact carbon footprint, even if it's based on estimated data, but give a number to the footprint of your burger, that's then more rewarding to reduce that by 20%, say, rather than just sort of knowing you've moved it in the right direction if you reduce the beef content. It's a bit more engaging to kind of get your teeth into. They are also crazy cheap as well. I've been really flabbergasted by this. But really recommend the value for money of Climato. Also, separately, they're running a referral scheme. So if anyone's interested, let me know. But no, they are great, I promise. Cool. Big thing that's enabled us to do, therefore, is move beyond the kind of meat-free binary in this conversation about carbon footprint of food. So I'm sure most of us will be familiar with this classic chart of carbon footprint by protein-rich food. And I suppose, obviously, plant-based foods are kind of lower in terms of their intensity. For that reason, SSP's kind of previous target for reducing food and beverage emissions was about the offer of plant-based and vegetarian products, which was absolutely the right start point. That target was set several years ago. It's really clear to understand. It's sort of quite tangible. It's also based on our kind of actions, so controllable, but obviously has some flaws. So, of course, it's a kind of binary proxy for carbon footprint rather than being more specific. It's also, we found, to be quite a tough sell for most consumers, some people who are willing to make that move, but it is quite a big behavioural change. And of course, it focuses on our offer rather than the real impact of what we're doing. So yeah, the Climato data has allowed us to go a step further and create, kind of innovate with lower impact meals that still do contain animal protein of some kind. And of course, overlay that sales mix, some of the conversations we were having earlier, the sales mix to get to a slightly more realistic picture of our food and beverage emissions. My first learning here, though, is that it's a good reinforcement of the done is better than perfect thing. And I think we probably could have moved faster had we just made a call and said that actually we're going to exclude country of origin data from these estimates. And I think this speaks to where SSP is in its kind of maturity journey. And I'm sure some of you will work for businesses that are further on here, and therefore that level of nuance is really important. But fundamentally, the speed of getting some information based on kind of average footprint of ingredients we found was ultimately the right trade-off to just start doing something, and then we could layer in that accuracy a bit more over time. We then were able to map, I suppose, in more detail the sort of food and beverage footprint of our business and start to create these kind of charts, which maybe you'll have for your own kind of businesses. It's allowed us to sort of categorize our offer, so menu options that rank from A to E, which is the Clamato rating scale of carbon footprint, of course, overlay sales volume, then sales value and profit as well, which I haven't got on this chart, but it's an important lens, and then, of course, how that drives our actual footprint. And this revealed to us a few things that you'll probably observe as well. The first is we've actually got quite a decent representation of low or very low impact dishes, which is a really positive start point, but they're not pulling their weight in terms of sales volume. So the immediate kind of strategic question there is how can we drive more sales through these already quite low impact options? And the second thing that we observed is that we've actually got a really small proportion of very high impact dishes. So again, looking on offer, we thought, okay, we're doing pretty well here. But because they are so high impact, they are kind of often off the end of the scale of E, they are disproportionately driving our overall carbon footprint. So again, because that's actually not that many dishes, it's quite concentrated, could they be easy targets for reformulation? Okay, we've then baked this into our kind of business insight tools. And this felt like a really important way to start having this influence everyday decision making outside of sustainability teams. So don't worry too much about the detail here, partly because it's commercially sensitive. But basically, the way that this works is that you can see that we've added it basically to the product description. It says like Clamato C now against the baguette. And then if you want to go into more detail, you can drill into that kind of sales mix overlay, and you can do that. So if you're the brand manager for Upper Crust, you can specifically look at Upper Crust. If you work in Manchester Airport, you can look at the emissions for the airport specifically. A few learnings there then. So the first is the kind of incremental value that we got from this data by making it unmissable. So previously, this kind of lived in an offline spreadsheet with the sustainability team, and obviously, therefore, depends on the right person being in the right conversation at the right time. By baking it into the default tools that everyone else is using, obviously, that doesn't immediately say that they'll be using it to influence their decision making, but awareness being the first step has kind of changed the literacy around some of these topics. So you now, if you're a commercial manager at SSP, you can't view the kind of profitability and volume of your products without also seeing the carbon impact of them. The second learning here was around, and this felt hard, but around compromising accuracy for simplicity, again, for this sort of early stage engagement with the team. So I spend quite a long time dithering about whether or not we should focus on the A to E rating, which is based on a standardized portion size. So it's based on like 100 grams of food. What's the carbon impact? Or the actual carbon footprint of the dish based on portion size. Those are obviously both really important metrics for our team. Of course, we will look into that nuance and look into that detail. But as soon as we tried to start explaining those two things to people, we were losing them really fast. So it's not to say we won't get there in future, but for now, just sticking with a simple, straightforward, color-coded system has felt like we'll get the most value. And then in terms of deciding between which of those two metrics to use, we basically made the call that actually reducing portion size is probably not, and we probably don't want that to be the biggest lever to help us reduce our carbon footprint. And therefore, equalizing based on portion size felt like the right punt. Cool. Okay, in terms of how we're then using that data to prioritize our actions, you might have seen that we flashed up those 550 brands that SSP owns and operates globally, which is incredible in terms of the amount of complexity. In the UK, that's about 50. But happily, we have quite a long tail, and four brands account for nearly 90% of our emissions. So that lens was super helpful to just tell us which teams needed to be our kind of priority targets for this. We're then able to break that down and look at the A to E sales mix of those areas, and that immediately starts to say, right, what's your plan? What are your kind of priority areas to tackle? This is obviously a kind of hyper-logical way of prioritizing it. And I was like, right, great. Well, I will simply start with casual dining pass and work my way down. But I think what I sort of ultimately had to learn and accept is that it's kind of fine to also overlay like who will reply to my emails and who wants to have a conversation about some of these things, which again, at first felt kind of wrong. I sort of wanted to do it in a really clearly defendable, prioritized way. But ultimately, there's so much to go after here that I do think starting where you're pushing on an open door is probably fine. The data also helped us to do some myth busting, which felt like quite an important step. So a couple of the myths that we sort of tackled or started to reframe. One is around avocados. So I don't know if anyone else has been having this decision. Basically avocados had quite a bad name, I guess, at SSB and sort of were seen as the devil from a sustainability perspective. Obviously, some challenges there. They're not the best veg, sure, but they are so much better, obviously, than beef and pork, that actually, particularly if we're thinking about the breakfast space, if using them in a dish means you're more likely to pull people out of your full English breakfast, absolutely go for it. So, yeah, starting to be a bit more quantified with this helped us, I think, change attitudes around that specific ingredient. And the second one was around the importance of local sourcing. So this, particularly with the chef teams, had become super important, with good reason. Local sourcing is brilliant, obviously. But I think in terms of our prioritization of where we start and what kind of priority KPIs are to look at, obviously it's only 6% of the kind of average food footprint comes from transport, and that includes kind of air travel folded into that. So reframing that narrative around it's sort of what you eat potentially more important than where it's grown. And maybe we'll have a debate about that over lunch, but this is what we kind of put out there. And then to try and bring that to life, I saw this stat at a conference, so I just recalculated it and wanted to share that, yeah, you can fly a kilogram of pea protein around the world 10 times, apparently, and it would still be better than a kilogram of local British beef protein. So starting to put it into slightly more material and tangible terms felt pretty important. And then for the chef teams particularly, where we can start to get a bit more nuanced with this is perhaps to indicate that seasonality is in some instances perhaps more important than local sourcing. So yeah, I kind of love learning about this, which is the idea that obviously the open field is a more sustainable, kind of lower energy intensive way of growing things than in polytunnels or in covered, and therefore growing them in hotter countries, things like tomatoes, can be the better route. But the thing that became really clear to me, I suppose, while having these conversations is fundamentally just how personal some of this stuff feels. I guess this is not like coming into a business and showing some different ways that you can use Excel. People feel really passionate about this and feel pretty emotional about it. And actually, ultimately, that emotion is a good thing, because obviously we want people to feel invested in this journey that we're going on. But I think it just underscored the importance of approaching some of these topics with kind of tact and humility to sort of recognize that people will be trying to do the right thing. Food people particularly, like, really care about food. So it's sort of harnessing that and pointing it in the right direction rather than perhaps coming in and saying, you're obviously wrong, let's do something differently. So on to some of the experiments that we ran, and I'll just share three learnings here. We started our experiments by pulling the kind of easiest levers and those that had lowest risk for us as a business. So starting over on the left-hand side, for us, that's about kind of influencing which products customers are more likely to buy is easier for us than kind of changing supply. That's where we'll go kind of later, I think, in our journey. But starting with nudging customers to choose lower impact options. So we did an experiment in our casual dining bars, and basically casual dining bars are like those units in an airport where you can get like a pint at 8 a.m. and an all-day breakfast, that kind of thing. So we sell a lot of, as you can imagine, fairly kind of high intensity food through those units. We took one example, the factory, and just changed which dishes had a picture. So we didn't change the range, because that, as the first conversation, felt quite difficult actually for the business, but just changing which one we put attention on and amplified. And I guess, yeah, as the book Nudge would suggest, we did manage to shift volume into that product. And actually, I was kind of surprised by the scale of that change. That felt really, really positive as an influencer. What's also worth saying is that the two dishes that we decided to picture instead of, as well as having a lower carbon impact, they also had a higher profitability as well, which, you know, this won't be news to any of us, but I suppose I probably underestimated the degree of conversation and reframe we would need to have about the relationship between sustainability and commerciality. So obviously things that don't cost money or are cheaper will have better business buy-in.
So ask a question, what percentage or what movement did you get just by doing that? Because it's one of those things, you see, it's so simple, but really impressive when you go, oh yeah, right. What you know, broadly speaking, what do you achieve with that?
Well, so that's the 30%. So we saw a 30% volume come out of the ribs and be absorbed by the other two dishes, which I'm really surprised it's that much, to be honest. But great. Good news.
And you think it's just literally the suggestion you sit down at 7:30 in the morning with your pipe stella and you go, oh, you're back ribs, or you say fish and chips?
I think quite possibly. And there probably are travel nuances to this. So we know people are ordering really fast when they're ordering in an airport and kind of, you know, speed of service becomes really important. So that probably is part of it. As well as possibly, I suppose most of our customers are not repeat customers and people fly quite infrequently. So unlike the high street, they're probably coming in to the airport without a fixed idea of what they want to eat, which is perhaps different if you go to your favorite restaurant, you're like, or a restaurant chain possibly. But encouraging first sign. So this point around sustainability and commerciality, you know, is I suppose that has become almost the subhead of our sustainability strategy internally. And whilst, as we were just talking about, there will obviously be areas that we need to invest in to move towards some of our goals, I have been pleasantly surprised by the number of initiatives we've been able to implement in the first few years here that have either saved us money or kind of enhanced profitability, whether that's kind of reducing our refuse management costs or reducing plastic tax. And I suppose, I don't think this is a kind of revolutionary point, but I suppose leading with those and almost finding for each team the first thing that they do on sustainability, not costing them money, I think has helped me generate a lot of buy-in and kind of improve the brand of sustainability from where it was before. We're then starting to move up the chain. So my second kind of example of an experiment is more about changing the range and creating new products that have a lower carbon impact. And again, key learning here really was just to slide this into the normal range review process. I think, again, there was the expectation that this would require additional kind of out-of-cycle work and relieving that pressure, I think, again, helped me make friends, which is also important. So the brand that we targeted to do some of these initiatives on is a brand called Soul and Grain. Pretty small scale for us. We've only got a handful of these units, but it is already positioned as slightly more health and kind of sustainability focused, and therefore felt like it would be easier to get the buy-in to start making more explicit changes here, which we could then think about rolling into some of our brands where there is less obvious consumer demand for some of this stuff. So in terms of what we did, we used that Clamato line level insight and ingredient level information to come up with some new products and delist some of the higher impact products. You'll see from this that actually our range was not bad to begin with at all. There was nothing in the very high impact space. This isn't the kind of beef burger brand. But I think what you'll also see is that we haven't radically transformed the customer proposition. Like these still sort of feel like similar products and a similar kind of vibe for customers, but they do have significantly lower carbon footprint. Crucially as well, we still had lots of animal products in this range, but just flexing which ones we chose and the quantities and ratios in the recipes has kind of delivered some material impacts. Happily, this worked, and it worked across all of the metrics that we were interested in. So our new range is nearly half low impact, which is awesome. This really importantly has translated to a 14% reduction in kind of sales weighted carbon intensity. Again, which is more than I thought, particularly because when we just did the menu, it was 11% lower from an unweighted perspective. So the range on average was 11% lower carbon footprint. This then more than pulled through to sales as well. Encouraging. Also, really importantly, we saw a 10% sales uplift with profitability maintained. So I think I maybe got a bit lucky with this one, but it's been really helpful to have quite a clean, tidy case study to then go back to the rest of the business and say, look, by taking this approach, by doing it in a low-risk way, by still folding in customer insight, we can kind of deliver on some of these goals, make, you know, it's double-digit progress whilst protecting profitability. I suppose there was a conversation that I wasn't totally anticipating that we had throughout this process, but I thought might be helpful to share, which was, I suppose fundamentally, I think we all get that to deliver on these goals, we're going to have to move ahead of the consumer. We just talked about how wouldn't it be lovely if consumer demand changed, and we're not there. I suppose what I hadn't kind of fully appreciated was the fact that through this project, we came to realise that is fundamentally different from other principles of marketing and everything else we do in the business, which is like figure out what customers want and then give it to them as cheaply as possible. So this does actually buck quite like a core trend. And I think facing into that kind of ideological debate felt quite important to be able to unlock, I suppose, some more productive conversations, because I found I was basically continuing to get a really well-meaning pushback, which is, this is not what customers want. We must be customer-centric in our menu design, which obviously is right and sounds right. But I suppose what we're talking about here is like long-term customer interest, as opposed to, yeah, short-term what they want in our shops. I did also want to share something that I think maybe hasn't gone very well. And jury is still out, essentially, on the kind of value for us in this scenario of low carbon footprint labelling. So we did the cautious thing of calling out the low carbon products rather than doing the full range. So we're not calling out the products that are high impact. That felt too high risk. Haven't finished the analysis yet, but no obvious indication that this has helped drive consumer behaviour, which, again, just kind of plays into that same point. Okay, so my final example, my final experiment is moving slightly higher up and sort of with the credibility that we've built, was allowed to start tweaking some of our kind of big sellers. But maybe just to offer something that I found helpful to allow me to move up this scale within the business, and it's a bit of a sort of political one, which is essentially around using sustainability to make various individuals in the business famous. So I don't know if it's the same in your business, but I find sustainability gets a disproportionate amount of airtime in kind of big strategy days, internal comms, and therefore we can use that airtime to thank and give credit to the individuals who did answer my emails when I kind of first engaged them on sustainability. And I found that's had a really clear impact in terms of bringing some of the people who are less kind of intrinsically motivated by some of this stuff. Basically, if kind of partnering on this stuff is a way to advance your career, that's obviously another kind of pull factor for working together on it. So going back to our casual dining bars, because they're kind of fairly big proportion of our estate, that's where we started to have a play with some of the big sellers, both looking at high carbon, high volume products, if we can tweak them, as well as looking at products that had a low carbon footprint that we wanted to kind of get more sales volume through. So on the former, we did a couple of things. So we changed our steak and ale pie to become a chicken pie, still kind of meets a similar customer need, super classic, super familiar. And also, having had that conversation about avocados, we did do something to reduce their usage, which is actually an initiative that one of our chefs came up with, which is to cut the avocado smash with edamame beans, so it's 50-50. So it's a small improvement from a carbon footprint perspective, but I wanted to include it as well because it's not an idea that came from the sustainability team. It came from democratizing that data and allowing motivated people to start kind of playing with it. What we also want to do is look at the sales, see if we can pull more sales through existing low carbon products and perhaps by changing them or optimizing them. And what we found was that our plant-based burger wasn't really going anywhere. So we did some research around kind of what are the key levers to pull to sell more plant-based burgers. And one of the big things that came out was in plant-based, quite often people will name check the brand, and that's used as like a quality signal. So what we found is that Beyond was being used most frequently and had really, really high recognition with customers. So we moved to Beyond and we name checked them on our menu. Which is great. I think our product's delicious. The thing I wasn't expecting, though, is this amazingly got like press take-up, which, again, I'm surprised by. Maybe I shouldn't have been so surprised by all of these things that have happened in the last year. But in my mind, that's not a kind of revolutionary move. But the comms team kind of actively pushed this out. And again, speaking to that kind of generating positive noise around this and making people famous, that makes people feel really good about the project that they worked on, that the purchasing manager has done something which is fundamentally in kind of catering and retail news. So yeah, I think that's kind of turned me on a little bit to the idea that by talking even more about the positive stuff that we're doing, it can have kind of tangential benefits. Final thing then is the impact that has had on our range. So this has just gone live, so I haven't got the kind of sales weighted view yet, but looking at our offer, it has a 19% lower carbon footprint, which is great. So let's see how that translates to sales, if and when. But yeah, if you're in an airport, please go and buy a Beyond Burger, because that would help me enormously. Cool. Okay, so that's basically it. I suppose next we will be moving on to thinking about scaling some of these initiatives. We're not there yet. So yes, question marks. If you have any trip hazards that you think I should be aware of, please come and have a chat to me. I'd love to learn more about them. That's basically it. I hope that's been useful, or at the very least, given you something to think about when you're next in a train station.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Food Matters Live podcast. We've got some exciting news to share about more live events this year. We're heading to Manchester in May, Ascot in October, and Dublin in November. And for the first time, we're hosting an event in mainland Europe. In September 2025, we'll be in Rotterdam. Join us as we inspire the future of food. Learn more and sign up at foodmatterslive.com. And we look forward to seeing you there.